The next case is 06355 J.M. Smucker versus J. Patrick McAndrew, Tax Commissioner.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Todd Slags, and I represent the appellant J.M. Smucker, LLC, in this case. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Watch your time there on the clock.
Thank you. The appellant's a wholly owned subsidiary of J.M. Smucker Company, and we're here today because that LLC entity was assessed a late filing penalty under the revised code. Under the revised code sections that are at issue in this case, there are two bases under which a party can be assessed a late filing penalty. A penalty under the statute. One is you file your return late, and the other basis is if the return that you filed fails to return or disclose assets that are subject to taxation. The concern of the LLC in this case was the second basis under which a penalty could be assessed. The record's clear that Mr. Latimy, who testified before the Board of Tax Appeals, and J.M. Smucker Company and the LLC entity were concerned that the numbers that they reported to the state were accurate. We knew we were going to late file, and there's no dispute that we late filed in this case. However, the review by the tax commissioner representative at the Board of Tax Appeals hearing, and even the Board of Tax Appeals in their opinion at page 6, recognized that we had a reasonable basis for trying to ascertain accurate numbers in order to submit to the state.
Counsel, is there no procedure for someone such as your client when they're, this by all accounts was a complex transaction and required professional appraisal to determine values? Is that the case?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is there no provision to notify the tax commissioner, we have this gigantic problem and we're going to have to be late, and to seek some approval or dispensation ahead of time?
No, there isn't, Your Honor. And we raised that issue with Nancy Johnson, who testified before the Board of Tax Appeals, and the suggestion that was offered by Ms. Johnson and the tax commissioner in their brief is that we should have filed based upon what we had.
A pro forma, yeah.
And then subsequently correct the return.
I saw there was even the suggestion you could file it and not sign it, which is sort of indefensible on the part of the state, isn't it?
Well, it's not in the guidelines, Your Honor.
Yeah.
A lot of the things in this case are not in the guidelines. Failing to sign the return is not in the guidelines, although we found out at the Board of Tax Appeals hearing that they will accept it. But going back to your initial question, there are other things we could have done, but we still would have been assessed a penalty. If we had underreported the value of the assets and timely filed, we still would have been assessed a penalty. And in our opinion, whether you late file or you file inaccurate numbers, the inquiry when you seek abatement of the penalty is, did you have reasonable cause for either late filing or filing inaccurate numbers? And the record in this case is clear, is that because of that penalty, you sign the return under penalties of perjury, J.M. Smucker Company and the LLC entity were very concerned that their numbers be accurate. And there were a number of things, as you mentioned, Your Honor. We were waiting for an appraisal. There was an IRS letter ruling with respect to the merger. we were proceeding in our reporting to the state under what's called the lump sum treatment under the Dudgeon Memorandum that's referenced in the record. And that required us, once we had our final numbers, to go to the state and say, we would like to report under the memorandum. Will you please review our facts? Here's what our return numbers will look like. And then once the state approves it, then you can use the methodology in reporting the return. So there were a lot of reasons why we were not able to timely file accurate returns.
Now, the test for the BTA is, did the tax commissioner abuse discretion? And you argue, well, they cut us a break once before, so we expected it again. Is that oversimplifying the argument?
Yeah, not exactly, Your Honor. Our quarrel is, you correctly note, our quarrel is with this five-year rule. And again, I would point out, I asked Ms. Johnson at the Board of Tax Appeals hearing, is this five-year rule in the Ohio Administrative Code? No. Is it a published guideline? No. And when you file a return in the state of Ohio, you get a booklet from the state, and it says this is what you need to do to file your return. And so this five-year rule is, it's not in the guidebook, it's not in an Ohio Administrative Code, it's an internal policy of the department.
Is that explained to taxpayers such as yourself prior to, at any point prior to filing?
No, I didn't know that this rule existed until the Board of Tax Appeals hearing.
And it's an internal guideline exercise of discretion.
Well, I think Ms. Johnson, I characterize it as an internal policy. It's something that if you work in the department, you know that if you go to your supervisor with a late filed return and the entity has not late filed in the last 5 years.
So basically, are you a habitual late filer?
Right.
And is there reference to this five-year ruling or five-year guidepost in any rulings by the tax commissioner, any opinions, anything that says, well, you know, we typically look to see if you're an habitual late filer, and we look back 5 years, and this is the sort of thing that we do.
No, not that I'm aware of, Your Honor. If you look at the final determination in this case, they don't make reference to the five-year rule. And the problem that I have based upon the facts in this case with the five-year rule is that, you know, we were a new taxpayer and we were trying to get the numbers for that, and then we were trying to get the numbers for our first full year return. And because both of those returns involved some of the same numbers, both returns were late, and we were deemed under this five-year rule a habitual filer. Well, we had no history.
Commissioner abated the penalties for Smucker before you got yourself into this jam.
No, no. Well, Your Honor, they did abate, and one of the reasons that we're here is that they
did
abate.
That's for Justice O'Connor. Go ahead.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Mr. Slake.
Thank you, Your Honor. They did abate for the company on the exact same facts, and the only difference between the LLC and the company was the fact of the filing history. But again, we didn't have a filing history because these were our initial returns. So we feel that
But is that a basis for us to consider an abuse? The fact that there was an abatement for the corporation, but there was not an abatement given the protracted, extenuating circumstances in this instance. Is that the essence of your argument to us here?
No, Your Honor. It's not. We feel that the five-year rule basically makes timely filing more important than accuracy. If you read the record in this case, Ms. Johnson is transfixed on timely filing because I asked her that question. I said, what's more important, timely filing or accuracy? And she said, oh, that you're comparing apples and oranges. Timely filing, we don't have any discretion. And then I asked for some examples about reasonable cause, and you can see them in the record. It was a natural disaster, or the accountant was killed driving the return to the post office, those types of things. But we feel that the tax commissioner's abuse in this case is that if they apply the five-year rule, they don't have to look at reasonable cause. And the record's clear that we did have reasonable cause. It's this unwritten five-year rule that we get
so
tripped
client,
up
on. You're stating basically that there was no discretion exercised. It was just an implementation of a blind rule.
Right, Your Honor. And I think the other problem is, though, is that the statute clearly requires the tax commissioner to review a request to abate a penalty under this reasonable cause and lack of willful neglect standard. And if you've got a rule, now I will admit that this five-year rule is nice. If you're managing a lot of people, then they look 5 years. If you've late filed, bam, you deny the abatement. But to me, it writes reasonable cause out of the statute. And I think that's an abuse of discretion in this case. As I said at the beginning, there are two reasons you can be assessed a late penalty: late filing and failure to accurately report. And I think both of those items should be weighted equally. The tax commissioner's action in this case and the Board of Tax Appeals decision and order affirming that action basically says timely filing is more important, okay? Because they don't even get to the reasonable cause issue. I mean, they agree that reasonable cause it exists, and hearing examiner Board Member Dunlap noted that in his dissent, and I think the Board of Tax Appeals recognized it at page 6. Justice O'Donnell, going back to your question about whether the fact that the company was treated different is enough, if you read Ms. Johnson's testimony in this case, my perception is that pretty much if you didn't late file the last 5 years, and you late file for some reason, they're going to abate. And we feel that based upon the facts in this case, because our new taxpayer return and our first full year return were so closely linked, that to treat us differently is really an abuse of discretion, because those returns involved similar numbers and were late for the same reason.
Counsel, you would be in better shape if the statute read that the penalty may or shall be abated in whole and part. But as I read this section, it says the reasonable cause, of course, is to be determined whether it's reasonable cause or willful neglect, but then the commissioner may abate in whole or part. So there's the discretion to deny, even if there's reasonable cause. You don't automatically say, well, we have reasonable cause shown, we're entitled to an abatement. That's not how the statute reads.
Right, Your Honor, and that's why we raise the issue with respect to the five-year rule, is it's not published anywhere. And we may have followed the tax commissioner's suggestion about filing inaccurate numbers and then tried to get out from underneath the penalty, but we've got a five-year rule that we don't know about. And so we made the choice to go for accuracy over timeliness, which, you know, was one way to go, realizing that we were going to have to file the abatement request. And I think that based upon the facts in this case and the policies of the tax commissioner that Ms. Johnson testified to, that it was an abuse of discretion for the tax commissioner to treat us different from other taxpayers. I mean, the policy that the tax commissioner applies under this section of the statute with respect to late filing is very clear in the record in this case. I mean, I worked through a number of examples with Ms. Johnson. And there's no question that if I filed my last five returns timely, I can miss a year, and it's pretty clear based upon her testimony, I'm gonna have a good shot of having it abated. And you know, the facts in this case where we've got the parent corporation being treated one way and the subsidiary LLC being treated a different way under the exact same facts just doesn't seem fair.
So, counsel, if we were to reverse, what would we do then? Reverse and remand for consideration under the discretionary, or another look, right?
No, I would remand with instructions to abate the penalty assessment.
But your argument is that they never exercised the statutorily required discretionary review here. They just looked and said, 5 year look back period, you fall within that, boom, you're assessed the penalty. So if the tax commissioner then should be afforded the opportunity to take a fresh look at your application.
They did, Your Honor, in the testimony of Ms. Johnson before the Board of Tax Appeals, because she reviewed our petition, which are pages 4 and 6 in the supplement, and in her testimony at page 124 in the supplement, she reviewed those petition letters and said that those constituted a reasonable basis for the late filing of the returns. When you roll forward to the Board of Tax Appeals opinion at page 6, they recognize that there were certain circumstances on the facts in this case that would have justified the late filing of the return. And so we feel that the record in this case does show that reasonable cause was shown for the late filing of the returns, and therefore it's not necessary that the case be remanded all the
way. So then what you're asking us to do is discredit the 5-year internal look-back rule and say you cannot consider that, and you've got to just look at the merits of the individual arguments regardless of the time period.
Well,
is that what you're saying?
Well, Your Honor, I thought a lot about the 5-year rule, and I think there is a good argument that the 5-year rule, as it's been articulated by Ms. Johnson in this case, really goes beyond the statute. Because when I look at some of her examples, I don't think that, if you haven't filed in the last 5 years, I don't think they're looking to see whether there's reasonable cause. So I think there's an argument that the 5-year rule, you know, what they're doing in practice really goes beyond the statute, because they're not going in to make a determination about reasonable cause.
But you just said that they did assess that there would be reasonable cause under, you know, admitted that there was reasonable cause.
Oh, in our case, in the facts of our case, Your Honor, they did. And if you look at Ms. Johnson's testimony, she reviewed our petition, and she said that based upon the facts contained in the petition, it was her opinion that it constituted a reasonable basis.
But for the 5-year look-back rule and them taking a look at 2004 and 2005 as being a double infraction.
That's correct.
Mike, thank you, Mr.
Expired. Thank you.
Slags. And Mr. White.
Counsel, before you get started, would you comment on the use of this 5-year look-back period and its precedent over the facts that are presented to the board?
Yes, sir. Justice O'Connor, there's no 5-year rule that's involved. It's a 5-year consideration. One consideration the tax commissioner considers in determining whether or not to grant or deny.
And is that provided for in the rule or any administrative, in the code or any administrative proceedings?
No, again, it's not a rule. It's a consideration the commissioner looks at, among other considerations the commissioner looks at to determine whether or not to grant or deny a penalty abatement. Other considerations would be the fact that the taxpayer may be a new taxpayer and therefore has not been aware of the obligation to file a return on a timely basis for the first 9 months, the first, not 3 months, when he starts his tax year. There may be several other considerations, and basically the tax commissioner looked at the totality of the circumstance in this case and determined not to grant the penalty abatement in this case. I'd like to indicate that the tax commissioner, with police court, did not abuse his discretion in refusing to abate the mandatory late filing penalty, by which he had determined actually to impose not the 50%, which is maximum penalty he could have imposed. He actually imposed a penalty of 15% and 10% of the maximum penalty. The taxpayer in this case did not file the return until the first return, until 16 months after he began doing business in this case. And the tax commissioner reasonably imposed not a mandatory, the option of the maximum penalty that could have been imposed of 50%, he imposed a 10% penalty for that late file return, which was 3 months past the due date. The second return that was filed a month later, and that return was due 90 days after the taxpayer began business in Ohio. And that return was filed 14 months after the due date. The tax commissioner did not impose a 50% penalty, which he had authority to impose. He imposed a penalty of 15%. The tax commissioner has the discretion to abate penalty. When an impeachment petition is filed and the tax commissioner determines that the failure to file the return timely was for reasonable cause and not willful neglect. So there's a duty on the part of the taxpayer to file a return timely and to list the taxable personal property that has been used in the business as to value, as to tax district, and as to the tax district. In this case, the taxpayer did not file that return in a timely manner.
Mr. White, the difficulty I'm having with this, and I appreciate everything you've said, and it's so true. One was 14 months late, one was 3 months late. But the commissioner abated the penalty for the corporation, but the LLC was reliant on the information, some of the same information that was in the corporation's tax return. And in order to file accurately, the taxpayer says, I waited until I was able to file an accurate return. And you abated the penalty for the corporation, but you didn't abate mine. And the only thing that seems to be interfering with that consideration is this five-year consideration that you're telling us about.
I think, and if
I could remove that from the equation, why wouldn't it be more reasonable to say we did abate it for the corporation, so therefore we should abate it for this taxpayer because it's really reliant on the same information?
Because the parent and the subsidiary are, first of all, in not similar situations. The parent had no prior history of filing a return.
Well, that's what I'm trying to remove the five-year consideration. So if you take that out of it.
Then what we have here, we have a subsidiary that has began business and in this state and has never filed a return timely, that has actually filed, first time he's listed his returns and listed his taxable property.
But the reason it didn't file, you've already considered and said, is a reasonable basis for not filing, and there shouldn't be a penalty, and I'll abate it.
Well, again, there is a duty on the part of any taxpayer that begins business in the state to list their property and use a fair estimate of the listed value. In this case, there's a claim that the reason the return was not filed is because, one, they had IRS considerations. That was done well before the returns were actually do. There's another argument that the inventory did not have complete values on the inventory. A new taxpayer is to file an estimated value of its inventory that's to be used up to the beginning of next year. So you could have actually filed an estimated return with regard to the inventory. The actual fixed assets, the listed property that's used in business was to be listed from the time the business began. So he had that information. He could have filed the 2002 return. The 2003 return, there's claim that they did not have the information to allocate the price. That information was available in April of 2003. The return was not due until April 30th of 2003. They requested an extension, and the return was extended to be filed by 15th of June of 2003. They did not file that return until well after, 3 months after the return was due. Finally, their claim is that they needed to get a lump sum allocation permission from the commissioner. Well, that application was filed after both returns were well past due. It was filed in September of 12th of 2003, and the return, their 2003 return, was filed 5 days later. So they did not even rely upon that. The commissioner looked at the totality of the circumstances here and determined that this taxpayer was simply different from the parent in that even though the parent had, in both of them had to rely upon the data for the reorganization, the taxpayer could have estimated the returns and filed those returns and then come back later. There's a duty on the part of the taxpayer to come back and either do one or think two things. File an application for file an amended return or for an application for final assessment. And the taxpayer took neither one of those courses.
Well, counsel, the appeal is based on an abuse of discretion.
Yes, Your Honor.
And from what I gather from the basis of your statements to the court, there was recognized good cause not to have filed, but the tax commissioner then exercised discretion by reducing a possible penalty of 50% to 15%, and thus cutting the taxpayer break, so to speak, and that was all the discretion and consideration that the tax commissioner deemed warranted under this circumstance, and that is the sum and substance of the discretion employed. Is that correct?
Well, Your Honor, I think that there are two discretionary decisions made here. One was the discretion that the courts, you have pointed out, is that the commissioner chose not to impose the maximum.
And let me ask you about that. How often is there the imposition of the 50% penalty?
Well,
is that the common course of conduct, or is it everybody gets 15%?
No, Your Honor, it really is based, again, upon discretion. If a taxpayer shows a desire not to ever file his return, or at least has filed a return, you know, willfully in disregard for the obligation to file a return timely, I would expect the commissioner would file and impose a 50% penalty, because that is a willfully filed return. But the commissioner is actually, you know, looking at all the different factors to determine what the penalty should be when he makes that penalty determination. So it really depends upon the facts of each individual case.
So it's a case-by-case consideration for the amount of penalty from none to 50%.
No, there is an obligation for by law for the tax commissioner to impose the mandatory penalty. If the penalty statute provides that the penalty shall be up to 50%, and therefore the tax commissioner looks at the totality of circumstances and determines what amount of penalty should be imposed.
And then that's purely discretionary on the part of the tax. There's no guidelines that say, well, in this case you get 15%, in this case you get 20%, here's 22%, the criteria that has to be met. Are those kind of guidelines in existence?
Not that I'm aware of. I believe in regard to personal property tax, I believe that area is where the tax commissioner is left to the discretion to determine the penalty to be imposed. With regard to the second discretionary issue, the tax commissioner by statute is given authority for discretion to abate penalty when it's determined that he determines that there is reasonable cause for failure to file and there's not willful neglect. In this case, the tax commissioner determined, because this taxpayer was a repeat habitual filer, had filed back-to-back late returns, it determined that there was no reasonable cause. And then, given the consideration of the totality of circumstances, namely that there was a 17-month late filing and there was a 3-month late filing.
Well, counsel, you don't dispute, do you, that this was a complex transaction for Smucker? For Procter & Gamble, it may not have been huge, but for Smucker, I think the record reflects it doubled the size of the company. That there were important internal revenue considerations in this transaction, and that, again, for tax considerations, Smucker would want to and need to appraise the personal property and real estate, presumably, to assign values, because that also, whatever doesn't come out that is assigned to that ends up as goodwill, I assume, in the transaction. So,
well,
that is a fairly complex set of chores that need to be accomplished.
And Ms. Johnson at the hearing expressed that the commissioners recognize that their mergers and acquisitions are complicated transactions, and that a taxpayer, when that has occurred, would still expect to be obligated to file the return and explain that the numbers that they're providing may have to be adjusted at a later point in time. But still, in this case, and the concern with this commissioner is that for 16 months, this taxpayer was engaged in business.
Is it true that part of the explanation was because the accountant is saying, I didn't want to sign a return. There's an affidavit, an oath that I have to sign, and I didn't want to sign that on numbers that I couldn't trust.
Again,
that he was told that you can file this without signing it, and we accept that?
Well, that apparently Ms. Johnson indicated that during a certain administration period of time, that it started and then stopped after that administration, that was done. But the common practice was to expect the taxpayer to sign the return. With regard to the signing of the return, again, it's expected that the taxpayer file estimated tax values. And if there's any correction, some correction to be made at a subsequent date, the taxpayer is expected to come back and file an amended return.
These forms, I don't recall the box that says that you check that says this is estimated.
No, it's a fair.
Am I right? There's no
value.
Place on the form to indicate that this isn't necessarily true value. This is an estimated value.
No. What I'm suggesting is that.
So when you sign the oath, the oath is these are the right numbers.
No, the oath is that the information provided is true and accurate. Okay.
Right.
And what the taxpayer is listing is the property that's used in business, and giving the best estimate of his value, his determination of what the values of those items are. Obviously, the tax minister would have an opportunity to review that value and come back and determine that it's not accurate. So what the taxpayer is purporting to show when he files his return is what he believes.
So what do? You take Procter & Gamble's depreciated value, even though you've paid fair market value for it? Is that you just have Procter & Gamble give you what they reported last year and file that on the return?
Well, the whatever value the taxpayer chooses to use to file the return timely is the value that should be reported. But you need to file some value, some return.
I mean, but how else would you do it? I mean, you're sitting over there in Orrville trying to figure out what machines are worth in a Crisco plant that Procter & Gamble has been operating. How do you do that other than just take their numbers if you don't have an appraisal?
Well, there are several pieces of data that was available. They did a due diligence investigation of this company before they even started considering to buy the company or the assets from this company. They had
that due diligence would generally look at how much money can we make running this business. Wouldn't it?
Well, they had an accountant, and they had the assets available to them to at least make some kind of judgment as to what they were generally worth. The option was not to refile at all and then incur a penalty for all the items they failed to list, or to file the return and list some value and then incur a possible penalty for that difference in the amount they failed to file.
Either way, you're advocating, well, by advocating file whatever you can, and there's no indication on there that this is an estimated or to be amended responsibility on behalf of the accountant. You're advocating form over substance here. It's more important to file a piece of paper than to get it right.
No, Your Honor, what I'm suggesting is that it's important to file and get it right if you can. But if you cannot actually get the exact figures together, at least file and then explain that you have some complications that will recognize that these figures that you're providing are not the accurate figures, and you will supplement that by an amended return.
Is there anything in the statute that explains to the taxpayer that this is a possibility?
No, but there is a provision in the statute for a taxpayer to file a request for final assessment. And the taxpayer also, apparently the department has gone through the policy of allowing an amended return to be filed to correct the return that was incorrect in the first time of filing.
That's an internal department policy to allow for amended returns?
No, I think that actually is, well, as far as I know, it's a practice that's been done by the department.
But not statutorily provided for?
Not that I'm aware of, sir. I also say that the Board of Tax Appeals reviewed this determination to determine whether or not there was abuse of discretion, and they determined that the tax commissioner did not abuse his discretion in denying the full abatement or partial abatement of the penalty that was imposed. And this court determined abuse of discretion is one that where there's an attitude in the court such that their decision is unreasonable, arbitrary, and unconscionable. And the Board of Tax Appeals determined that that was not done, and we ask this court to affirm the determination.
Thank you, Mr. White. Mr. Slags, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
I'd like to pick up on the last point of Judge Lanzinger. Your Honor, there's a two-year statute of limitations with return filings in Ohio. It's Revised Code 57-1125. And I discussed this with Ms. Johnson at the Board of Tax Appeals hearing. We still get assessed a penalty. If we file using guess numbers timely, and they're low, we're still going to get a penalty under the statute. So I don't think this, you know, file something and amend it later is an adequate remedy.
Although the penalty is only on the wrong section. I mean, what should have been reported and wasn't,
yes,
correct? So you save something by filing.
Our reported assets on the returns and the record went up by a factor of 10 in this case. And inventory, which were the assets on Cincinnati, were a very significant number for the LLC. I think it would have been impossible to guess accurately. I still think the penalty would have been significant. Thank you.
Thank you. Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.